This is a production of Cornell University.
I call the meeting to order at 4:38 p.m., Tuesday, October 30th. First item on the agenda, approval of minutes. If everybody will look at page 3 of the minutes, there is a minor correction. Kathy Zollner of the Chief of the Cornell University Police Department. If you look on line 2, it's operated by the wrong company. It's now modified to it's operated by the wrong model. Is there any other amendments to the minutes? I hear no other corrections. The minutes have been passed. The next item on the agenda, report. Elizabeth, the executive board report, please.
So we're just kind of keeping these very brief because we have a lot on our agenda today. But the executive board met last week, and we discussed primarily the committee, and in particular how we are still lacking some appointments from the various constituencies and how best to address that issue. But we came to the decision that the committees are, for lack of a better term, full enough right now to begin meeting. So I know that the infrastructure committee has been discussing meetings and that sort of thing. So we're getting committees rolling. That's pretty much all we have for today.
Thank you, Liz. Adam Killen from the Student Assembly.
Sure. A couple announcements. Just to recap from last week, we had a very successful event on Hope Plaza. It was called Cornell Care and Community, Illuminate the Night. There are a couple hundred students who came, as well as President Sporden and Chair of the Board, Bob Harrison, spoke. It was a very successful event. This week begins recruitment for CUBIS Watchers. It's the peer-to-peer social intervention program that is going to try and reduce high-risk drinking within the undergraduate community. So you might see that blurb go over a couple listers. And then as far as student assembly resolutions this week, we are going to be looking at a resolution calling on the Office of the Dean of Students to hire a new associate dean position for LGBTQ outreach within the LGBT Resource Center, and also a safety survey that undergraduates have been working on for about 6 months, and they're collaborating with staff in CUPD and other offices and students on campus.
Thank you, Adam. Mitch for the GPSA.
Yeah, we also sponsored or co-sponsored the event on Hope Plaza.
I forgot to thank the GPSA and the UA for co-sponsoring. I meant to say that.
we think. So we also participated. And then we also, in addition, participated in some of the Board of Trustee interactions with students this past week, and really presented our idea and our plans forward as a graduate community initiative, which I know I brought to this assembly before in brief detail. And they're very, the trustees who we presented this to and talked more with about this, we're very pleased that we were doing it, and we're hoping to gain some airtime, if you will, at the March meeting of the trustees to explore this further. We also, just yesterday, passed a resolution in the midst of the hurricane that would make our faculty advising awards committee a standing committee. Last year, the GPSA held and gave out awards to 3 faculty members who were excellent in teaching and advising for graduate students. Evan, please correct me if I missed something about this, but it was a really fantastic event. It was a really, I would say, moving event. The faculty felt very honored that the graduate and professional students were able to give them awards for teaching and advising. And so we feel very strongly about making that a permanent, absolutely setting it in stone that it will be a permanent event every year. And so we did more of that by making our committee a standing committee. sounds like a minor change, but it's a really big deal for us, and we hope to be able to better recognize our outstanding faculty members.
Thank you, Mitch. Tanya, for the employee assembly.
The employee assembly has not met since the last UA meeting, so I'm not going to report.
Okay, nice and quick. Dean Burns for the Faculty Senate.
Dean of the Faculty Office is getting into a routine. We're actually doing things in a pretty regular way. We pretty much filled all our committees. One thing that happened in the Faculty Senate at the last meeting was that we approved the first dual degree with the technology in New York City. And I anticipate that would be very contentious. It's not at all contentious. It was either 1-8 vote. So that was a surprise to me. And since I last reported here, we did hold this meeting of the informational meeting for the faculty on MOOCs. And in Saturday, we probably got 150 or 200 faculty members. We invited students, but we have very, very few students. And that's progressing. There's now a committee of the faculty who are meeting to try to decide who or not be available to join one of these consortia.
So can I ask a quick question on that point?
Yes.
If there's further discussions about the MOOCs, I know for myself, and I'm sure Adam would agree, if there's further events that students can participate in, would you let the two of us know, and we'll make sure the word gets through our assembly? I didn't receive anything. Perhaps other members of my assembly did. But
you put an ad in the Sun, but the advertising board wasn't at the level
of your opinion. Okay. Yeah, do feel free to work with us in the future.
Yeah.
It'd be great.
Thank you, Dean Burns. Next, we have presentations from Mary Beth Grant from the Judicial Administration's Office.
Thank you. Hi, I think I know many of you, but not all of you. I'm Mary Beth Grant, and I've worked as a Judicial Administrator since 1999. And Joy asked me to come today to talk about some of the ideas I have to present to the Codes and Judicial Committee this year regarding the Codes and Judicial Committee. Before I do that, I would just like to introduce you to our colleague, Clint McHugh, who joined us in the law background, but he also has a master's in higher ed, similar to Jody Constantine, who's the other pay family member of our office. He's not having babies, so he's already been born. So, anyway, so I just wanted to make sure that you all got to make points as well. So, I don't have a huge agenda that I'm going to ask the CJC to work on this year, but a couple of small ideas and then a couple of things that I think are going to require some thoughts and research, and I want to pull folks in to that process rather than just coming up with an idea myself so that I can kind of think of it as a foil. So the small changes are, we went through an audit recently and did well, which was nice, but one of the comments that the audit office had was that there needs to be some clarification in the code. Right now we have the right to appeal. For complainants to have the right to appeal if the Office of the Judicial Administrator resolves something by agreement with an accused person. And we've always interpreted that as meaning that an individual complainant has the right to appeal, not an institutional complainant. And the audit office has recommended that we get clarification for that. So if you review my recommendation, will be to make it that individual complainants and not institutional complainants have the right to appeal. I feel if we were to make it institutional complainants, it decreases the independence of our office. As we were looking at that, Clint and Jody also identified another area that in that same section that could be clarified where it defines what a hearing board can do if a complainant does do an appeal of one of our term exclusion agreements. Currently, the code talks about one of the options being that they can uphold the decision of the judicial administrator. It seems that that should be clarified to say uphold in whole or in part. Maybe part of it, and part of it to be. So those are fairly minor clarifications, I think. Another minor clarification or change would be to have an exception to confidentiality for student organizations accused of hazing. The reason that I'm going to put this idea forward is that
university-wide, there's an anti-hazing website to put a spotlight on organizations who've been involved in hazing so that students who are choosing to participate in the organization can make an informed decision. Without this kind of exception to the confidentiality of the code, the website is incomplete. They'll be able to identify organizations such as group-level organizations or athletic organizations that are disciplined by other entities, but they aren't able to identify acapella groups, newspapers, other organizations that don't want to identify by name because of the confidentiality issues, but there are some other types of organizations that have been referred to the Office for Hazing and nobody would know. So it provides more balance. And I'm not trying to point at the more difficult person that you see them in. I also want to review the hazing definitions and make sure that we don't have any need for clarification. The definition that was first put in place, I believe it was spring 2001 and clarified about 4 years ago and has recently been upheld by both the hearing board and the review board. At the same time, just because the board has upheld it, there may be ways to make sure that it's improved, that it's, that we have the best notes possible for students, and that we're using the best current practices. Things have changed in the field in the past 10 years, but I just think we should just take a look at it and make sure that, that it's providing the best opportunities that we need to for our community. The larger question that I want to spend some time looking at with the Code and Judicial Committee, and I don't have a particular recommendation. I've identified a problem that I would like help resolving. There are two of them. One is the issue of retaliation. We, a number of years ago, brought to the Code and Judicial Committee the concept that retaliation should be a violation of the code. And at that time, the committee did not pass it on to the University Assembly under the theory that one retaliation complaint could be resolved under the harassment section of the code. But since then, we've identified some situations that don't fit into the harassment section and want to explore having retaliation as an independent section. It's also more consistent with the work that Alan Nissen does with Policy 6.4, investigating sexual harassment complaints. Sexual assault complaints, and it just makes sense to have that as a possibility in both of these policies. The other type of retaliation that I think is trickier and will require more discussion, I've just anecdotally observed over the past couple of years that it seems to be a tactic by some attorneys, not all attorneys, but some attorneys, to use retaliation to use a counter complaint as a retaliatory system or a way to convince the complainant that they don't really want to push the card. So, for example, if one student has alleged that another student harassed him or her, the other student might come forward with a, well, I may or may not have done this, but you did all of this. And it's an intimidation tactic sometimes. The tricky part about it is sometimes it's an intimidation tactic, sometimes it's a valid complaint. And what I would want to talk about with the CJC is at what point do you identify it as one or the other? I happened to run into Professor Claremont in the street, and he and I were talking about it, and there were some similar issues going on in the civil world outside of Cornell, so I think there's children's expertise and ideas to it. So I've identified the problem and I've identified the solution, but I think that maybe together we can come up with a good solution so that we're not talking to find that going forward. And we're not making it a race to the forecast. You know, if there is a legitimate fight where both people are should be held accountable, we should be doing that. So a lot of tricky issues that we need to sort through. The other large question that I would like to process as a group to try to figure out if there are different ways of us to have hearings before the hearing board and before the review board, but particularly before the hearing board, that preserves all of the important rights that this group as well as the community have identified should be preserved for the students as well as complainants, but to do it in a more efficient manner. Right now, hearings can take 12 to 20 hours, and it's a huge amount of resources. I'm not convinced that that level of use of resources is needed to provide all of the protection. I am convinced that there must be more protection, the same level of fairness, because ultimately we want to ensure a very fair process, but in a more efficient manner. We don't have the answer to that. I've run a couple of ideas past some people, and you know, those particular folks did not agree with me, so I just thought, you know, why don't we all think about this together instead of me just coming up with ideas that get shot down? I think it's a really important question because as we examine our stewardship within the university, I think it's important that we're working in as efficient ways as we can while still meeting the goals that we want to meet. And I think that there's that right now maybe the balance isn't where it ought to be, and I think that we can do better. So doing great, but can always get better, right? And then the last thing, and I don't know how much time we have, this is something that we can discuss right now as a group, but Ari and I were talking about before we came in, before we started. One of the goals that our office put on our Toward New Destination Diversity Initiative going on at the University of Hawaii, are folks familiar with that?
Mm-hmm.
We've seen a lot of head nods. You know, trying to improve diversity within the Cornell community. One of the ideas that we had to try to increase the diversity or the knowledge of diverse community members about the admission board process and to encourage more people to apply to be on the admission board. So I'd be happy to talk about that now, or if any of you have suggestions about ways that our office can contribute to that issue, send me an email with ideas, but that's something that I'd like to do.
Thank you so much. Ready?
Ask you how to change your campus code and have some graph and see if you can see over the past.
So right now we're in the transition period. So as you may recall, the ultimate goal is to remove any issues that are Title IX related into policy 6.4. So sexual harassment, sexual assault cases will move to policy 6.4. But there, we're still in the drafting stages, and that'll need to go to the robust conversation with the policy advisors. So right now we're in the transition stage where we have some additional protections within the code, but it's still in the code. And
We're actually going to move any further discussions until after the president and Kathy Zoner's presentation, because the president is scheduled to come in very soon. So should we wait? Oh, sorry. Who had a question? Is there any more questions? Is there any more questions at this time? Adam.
I have one, but I can wait if you want to.
We have 5 minutes. We're going to stop whenever he comes in.
Thank you for presenting. I was wondering if you could explain the retaliation concept again and sort of how students or members of the community do use that as sort of an intimidation tactic.
So I think that the one form might be what I would say is maybe the more common form, where somebody has some type of negative ramification of the community or even speaking up. And that might not necessarily be by the accused person. So an example that just popped into my mind was there was a young woman who was the recipient of some harassment from she was in a small subgroup within the Cornell student population, and the accused person was also in the same subgroup, and she received a lot of pressure from others within the same subgroup, you know, back off, don't do this, you know, it's us against them, and you're you know, you're taking the wrong side. And that's actually happened in a number of different times in a number of different communities and small subgroups. And that there's a continuum where, you know, people might just be bad about people, like shunning them and things like that, but all of the retaliatory behavior. There might be more direct retaliatory behavior from a few students who start doing some more harassment activities, but that would also be covered under harassment. The situation that I'm thinking of are the, for the cross complaints. I don't know if cross complaints or counter complaints, but like expression counter complaints, too, too long since I practice law, where somebody says basically a tit for tat kind of thing. And it's happening more and more. We've had situations where there's a fight, and both people sort of equally started it, or maybe one person is maybe a little bit more culpable than the other, but they're both fully engaging and in a fight and some type of altercation of the code. And, you know, we've always taken the position that both people ought to be held accountable. Maybe one person is more accountable than the other, but they're both violating the code, they should both be held accountable. What I'm thinking of more is where the counterclaim is really made up out of thin air. So it might be something like, well, I'm denying the allegations that I punched this person in the face and created a black eye, and I want you to file a complaint that this person is lying to the university. And using the campus disciplinary system as a way to harass me for whatever reason. That's one that we had heard recently that I had found in his investigation. But the punch in the black eye was not the underlying complaint, but that concept. We had another one recently where one student said, this student is harassing me based on my ethnic identity, and there was a counter complaint that said, well, that's not true, and besides, this student is harassing me based on a sexual harassment kind of background. So, you know, in those examples that I've given, there may be some truth to it, but maybe not, and some of them who really feel like the underlying reason for the counter complaint is based solely on trying to get the person to back off. Because their fear, the case that I just said is the cross harassment complaint, the fear of somebody who's pre-med of winding up on the director of any kind to be like, oh, okay, then get back to that, and you're not saying
thank you so much. We're going to table all discussions until after the president speaks. I would like to recognize President Scorton, President of Cornell University, and Vice President of Communications, Tommy Bruce. Thank you so much for being here.
Hi, everybody. It's good to see you. This is a lot nicer room than the last time we were together. You know, Day Hall is a terrific place, really. Somebody told me, I'm not saying this is accurate, and we do have, you know, biologically oriented faculty in the room, that every day you work in Day Hall, your IQ goes down a certain amount, like 0.01. Joe, do you think there's any truth in that?
I'm slipping, but I'm not sure if it's deeper than that.
I'm definitely slipping. And I was thinking about our colleague, Glenn Altshuler, who's been there. Anyway. So I had an issue to bring up today. I've had a chance to talk a tiny bit with Joe, with Tanya, and with Adam, I guess, as well. It has to do with the shared governance groups having some direct contact with each other. And I think that's right. Tanya, we talked about it a little bit. Adam, we talked about it a little bit. And Joe, I brought it up yesterday, USC. So it's your decision whether this works or not, but I wanted to discuss this with the UA. So at least a couple of issues have come up in the last year, and then more recently the campus climate issues this semester, that led me to value even more the input that I get from the shared governance groups. And one thing I was thinking about was to the extent that issues intersect between the segments of campus. For example, one recommendation of the American College Health Association, which found its way into recommendations of the group Assembly for Justice, had to do with training programs or even courses related to issues that underlie the campus climate. We have the Respect at Cornell program that I'm very high on, and something oriented a little bit more toward the interface between regulatory compliance and the campus climate. But for the next step, I thought some sort of campus dialogue is really important. Some of that dialogue obviously could happen here. Some could happen in individual meetings I have with student leaders, with the UFC, with the EA, with ESA, with the GPSA. But it occurred to me that, for example, on the issue of should there be coursework related to some of this, formal coursework, that that's a discussion that the students and the faculty need to have. On issues related, for example, to the staff's doing actually more work than we ever had with a reduced staff workforce, not really even the same amount of work. The university's work has actually grown during the recession. That I think that would be the benefit from direct interaction between the leadership of the staff employees and the leadership of the faculty. So I wanted to let the UA know that I had made this suggestion. Whether you all follow up the suggestion is completely up to you. It wouldn't make sense for me to dictate that you had to do this. I also think it wouldn't make sense for me to be at the discussions or any other bureaucrat to be at the discussions. But I think the way I left it, I believe, and you guys can correct me if I misstate this, that Joe and the UFC are going to think about it, that Adam and ESA are going to think about it. I have not talked to GPSA about this, although we mentioned it in a student leaders meeting in passing, and that I think Tanya is going to consider it with the EA. So I just want to use the chance of this meeting to say that I encourage you to think about this. They don't have to be very frequent meetings. They don't even have to be periodic meetings. But I think at this point in time, there's enough going on campus that I think it would be great to combine the insights of the different shared governance groups. And I hope you guys will talk about this and think about it, not only as individual constituency groups, but also as a UA. So that's something that I'm looking forward to getting more input and hoping that you guys can talk to each other a bit about it as well. Otherwise, I'm at your service, whatever you want to talk about. Here I am.
I think we prepared some talking points for the
great.
I should have it.
But otherwise the procedure will probably be much like it was last week, where Joy will call, like, just raise your hand to Joy, and she'll make eye contact with you, and she'll add you to a list, and then she'll call you from that list, and try to keep your questions, out of respect to the whole group, as brief and concise as possible.
I think Randy had a question.
In terms of the campus climate, the campus climate is made out of individuals, probably more so than it being a climate, that there's individuals that act in a certain way. Is it really a matter of character more than climate? As, for example, transparency may be more of an issue with integrity. And is it worth it to have a discussion about character?
Well, I sure have no monopoly on ideas in this regard. Depending on what issue, what aspect of campus climate we're talking about, some of these things are huge societal issues. Some are things that are related to things that are unique to the campus. Sometimes I think integrity is potentially involved. But I think it's such a broad term, it's hard to tackle it as a general concept, which is part of the reason that I suggested that you guys have direct interaction between shared governance groups. I think it depends on what the issue is. So, for example, here's an area where we actually have quantifiable data. We did a staff survey last year, and we got back information, and an unbelievably robust response of 70-ish% of those asked to respond did respond. I've never done a survey or be part of a survey with that kind of response rate. I don't know about you all, but that's a big time response rate. And so there we have a whole set of things where there's been work put in place to deal with it. And I think there it's a matter of issues that are not related to integrity, to some extent transparency perhaps, and I think there's an obvious pathway to go down with those. Other areas, much harder to get your arms around. The issue of attempted sexual assault or sexual assault, unfortunately, is ubiquitous on college campuses. College campuses are open campuses. We like them to be open. And people are therefore at some risk. And how you find the happy medium, Randy, between openness and the kind of thing that the student assembly did the other night on Hope Plaza, like a week ago or something, a week ago tomorrow, I think, is terrific for bringing people together, for making sure that we hold each other accountable for things as much as we can. The broader societal milieu that makes it the case that at college campuses around the country this is a problem is something obviously outside of what we can do here. So I think it depends on what the issue is. But I think that a separate from predictable recurring issues like what's the level of staff or faculty salary, what's the level of tuition, what sort of benefits will we provide employees, what's the status of the Gannett Student Health Services and so on. Besides those kinds of issues that are come up periodically in a regular trustee developed schedule, all these other things, depending on how we look at it as individuals, we could ignore, we could kick under the rug, we could tackle. And like I say, I don't have any monopoly on good ideas, except that I've learned a lot from the individual meetings, emails, even the protests and the meetings I've had with protesters. I've actually learned a lot. For example, I was not aware of the American College Health Association paper until it was brought to my attention by someone comparing the Assembly for Justice demands. 5 out of the 7 demands were verbatim, I think that's accurate, from this document. And so there's something where the process of interacting with a completely ad hoc group that had nothing to do with the usual shared governance helped teach me things. So I'm turning the tables on you. I'm asking for you guys to help me figure out, depending on the issue that we're talking about, how we can move more expeditiously to solutions that are not simplistic, but that have staying power. So getting back to the employee survey, for example, I think things that involve the interaction between staff and supervisory personnel, whether supervisory personnel, staff, or faculty, have to be worked out by discussions with the people who represent those bodies. And that's why I'm, anxious, I think is the right word, for faculty leadership that represents, in a certain sense, the principal investigators of the campus to talk with that aspect of the employee representation that would deal with those working on grants and things like that. So I'm sort of throwing it back to you. I have my own personal theories about things, but I think that shouldn't be determinative of a campus-wide discussion. And so that was long-winded. To summarize it, I would say depending on the issue, I think the climate can be based on things that are not related to integrity but are related to university processes. Sometimes they're related to individual character and people's choices that they make. And sometimes they're related to things that are so broad in society as to, defy an easy solution. I'll give you an example of that. I have colleagues at universities that have gun control on campus that are considering liberalizing that and allowing guns on campus. And there's an issue that, I have a very strong opinion that that's a horrible idea, and that the reasons that homicides are rare on college campuses is because we have gun control. But nonetheless, there are places in which that will be discussed at the level of the state, if it's a public university, or at the level of the university governing board. So what I think we ought to do, Randy, is tackle the issues that we know are here that we could have some impact on by working together. And I was very moved by the Illuminate the Night, that was the name, right? Not so much the glow sticks, which were sort of chintzy glow sticks. They were not even the kind that you could wrap around your wrist or anything like that. They were sort of funky glow sticks. But despite that, I think they were really, don't you think? Yeah. But I think the thing itself was fantastic. Fantastic. There were people there who were speakers, who were upset, who were scared, who were angry, who were uplifting, who were willing to go forward, who were skeptical. And you guys did a great job of letting it all hang out there. And I thought we left in a good mood and then went inside to the memorial room and saw what you guys are doing. So that's what I'm looking for, is more shared governance at a time like this. I'm asking for it.
Daniel?
So, David, at the EA exec meeting today, we were talking about the recent lighting walk-around study that we did of campus lighting, and the issue came up of the ag spot and the lack of a direct path, I guess, in certain areas to the street.
Yep.
And there being inadequate lighting there, and from what I've heard, and again, I'm hearing this secondhand, but some lighting requests and things have gone facilities, and the comments come back that there isn't money for that. And yes, there's not money, but that's, I think, you know, a particular issue of importance that people feel, you know, the whole environment that we're in now, specifically in the state. So I don't know if you're hearing anything about that, but that was,
I didn't hear about the ag quad. I'm hearing a lot about lighting. Facilities is arguably, you know a lot about this from seeing the staff reductions over the years. Facilities are arguably the hardest hit unit in the university. We tried to buffer some of that at the very beginning of the recession. I eliminated the vice presidency that oversaw that, the EVP, and we eliminated some costs at the top. But that was just a drop in the bucket compared to the amount. So I have no doubts that under the general rubric of life safety related maintenance, I hate to call it that, but in a way that's what it is, that Q doesn't have the funding to get around the bases. I'll look into that personally and find out. I don't know, KZ, if you have any insights into that.
The reports are being accumulated as we speak. We have a public safety advisory committee meeting upcoming on the schedule where that group will discuss it and then we'll present a report forward. One of the things we're going to look to as a unit for our police was comparing prior requests for service to see what's been duplicated, what has been repeatedly asked for across the years, and prioritizing them at a higher level.
In terms of lighting. And can you remind me, KZ, do you have a seat at the table? I don't mean you personally, but does COPD have a seat at the table when Q has to do the difficult job of prioritizing those things?
Sometimes.
Okay. I don't understand that exactly, but you can tell me about that later. So so I'll talk to Q personally, though. And I hope this is accurate. I'm pretty sure that he has an algorithm. Algorithm might be too mathematical a term, but he has a process, a set of criteria, if not a formal algorithm, by which he evaluates life safety requests. I'll find out if that's the case and where this will go. Remind me the timing, KZ, on your putting forward your prioritized list to facilities. Roughly, just roughly. Okay, so Tanya, I'll get back with you. I'm going out of the country for 9 days next week. I'll do my best to get back to you before I go. Can you help me? Sorry to bother you with this. If I go and I haven't done it yet, or if the decision isn't made till I'm gone, then Tommy and I will be in contact and get back to you. So that's good.
I'd like to take a look at those reports in advance of that to see if you can adjust that one off of, has it resurfaced again on this year's report, something that we reported last year.
Yeah. And I think the bigger question, in addition to the importance of the specific question, especially at a time like this, I'd like to be able to report back to the UA is how those decisions are made. And I know you know this and you don't need my permission, but don't forget, you should feel free to call any university officer here to talk about whatever you want. They all understand that it's a high priority for me and for you. Yeah. And so I'm not saying you need to call Q, but I'm just saying it's also okay. And I'll let him know that it came up in this context. And if you decide you do want to hear from him about that issue, he'd be at your service. He's terrific.
Could you let the other assembly leaders know about the response to Tommy's question?
Yeah, no, I'm going to give it to Tommy.
Yeah, we'll take care of it.
Yeah, and Tommy's or his close colleagues are, as you know, with you guys.
Yeah, we'll make sure you get the answer.
Good. Thank you. Thanks, Tanya.
Jim?
Sir, talking about lighting budgets and stuff, financing this university is exceptionally complex. I think some of us in the room, maybe all, are aware that the university is contemplating a new budget model, funding model, to implement next year, ostensibly July 1, on how money will come from units to units and the colleges. The details aren't out yet that I'm aware of, and if they are, I'm one of the ones who should have gotten them already. I'm concerned that the change is large and we haven't seen it yet, and the implications of the change, we won't know the second and third order effects until we've looked at it, talked to our people, and if the word doesn't get out soon, I mean, nobody likes this kind of change, but we have to get through the complaining and through the meat of what is the fallout for cross-registered classes, financing research centers, where is this IDC going to go, how are we going to pay the heating and lighting bills?
Yep.
And we need some time to digest it, think about it, have our own forums to give feedback, because I guarantee you, as you would know, the first time this hits the street, it won't be perfect, and there'll be a lot of questions that will need follow-up answers.
Okay. It's a very important question, very, very important question.
And more importantly than that, we paid for heating for 150 years. What's driving this level of change?
So you always want me to be straightforward with you, right? and so... Are we on the record or off the record? Is our media here? Daily Sun here?
Yep.
Okay. So I don't want to talk about this on the record with the Daily Sun. I'm glad to have a private conversation with the UA. I can say a couple things on the record. On the record, there has been a lot of discussion of the budget model. Even though for 150 years we've been paying the heating bills, we found out when the recession hit that we did not have a sustainable budget model. Hope that doesn't step on anybody's toes who's here, but it's a fact. We didn't have a sustainable budget model in terms of retiring debt that we took on buildings. We didn't have a sustainable budget model in terms of paying back funds taken out of the general purpose budget for new initiatives that didn't have a long-term source of funding. So I want to say strongly that we need a new budget model, and I'm very supportive of the need to do one. Now the question is this the ideal budget model? Like you suggest, Jim, we're not going to know about all the details of how the budget model feels, works, and fits until it's tried for a while. I'm convinced and supportive this is a good next step. This budget model is a good next step. The only piece that I'm off the record with is that I don't know exactly where the provost is in his working his way through talking to people, and I'm willing to make some conjectures about that, but I don't want the conjectures to be in public because they may be all wrong. And I don't want to give people bad information and therefore cause concern.
Do you want me to turn off the recorder?
Yep.
Well, it's up to the Daily Sun. Normally, everything I do at the Daily Sun is on the record. When I meet with them in my office, generally on the record. The question is, are you comfortable taking this off the record? Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I
we can also go into executive.
Well, it's up to you guys, but if you turn this off, I'll just tell you what I think is happening. I believe that the Old and New Testament are also part of this story that we've been working on for so many years. And the part in the Old Testament where Abraham is asked by God to sacrifice Isaac, you know, that's the basis. They call it the Feast of the Sacrifice. There's a big big banquet this evening at... what you call it, Annabelle Taylor. But I'm pretty sure I'll see Kent before I go, so I'll mention it to him. And get back to you, Joy. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. And tell me your email, if I can get that.
My email's JS.
You want to say it quietly, because you don't want them to have it.
I'm pretty sure they all have it. But if you can send it to UA Chair.
UA Chair.
Dash Chair.
Dash Chair.
At assemblies.edu, is that right?
Yeah.
not cornell.edu.
I was going to give it to Tony. Okay, Tim, thanks for bringing this up. This is an important one. Good. You can go back in the record now.
Yep.
Thank you. And thanks for letting me talk about that.
Did you hit it? I think so.
UA-chair@assemblies.edu.
Assemblies.cornell.edu.
Oh, yeah, the way it could
I
be a different school.
Leave you a note. Assemblies. I'm trying.
Don't try. everything will be good. I'll get it through Tommy. In case Tommy's uncooperative, you could just send me an email with your address.
All right.
I haven't seen any hands raised. Adam.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for coming, President Gordon.
Yeah, good to be here.
So last week, especially with the event that the SA Plan and the UI and GPSA co-sponsored, and also sort of the letter that President Amherst, being my former provost, came out with, got a lot of traction within the student body, and I saw it all over Facebook, and a lot of students thought it was a really tangible statement with clear objectives, clear timeline to the events, in response to the events that happened at Amherst. And I was wondering, I know it's in preliminary stages right now, but what your initial sort of thoughts are going to be on your end of semester sort of report and your report in on sexual assault on campus and overall safety on campus.
The end of the semester report is going to depend on the follow-up of this incident management team that's been set up that has five sub-teams. But long before that, my goal, and if I wasn't clear about this at the student leaders meeting, I apologize, I meant to be clear about this. Long before that, we need to have more reports out to the campus on what's happening. And the situation at Amherst had some similarities and some differences to what's going on here. And, of course, I have great respect for President Martin and for, you know, her perspective on what happened. The end of the year message will report on ongoing progress of the teams from the IMT that we're working now to have direct student input onto each of the five teams. And I think that when we met with Ken Hubble, if I'm remembering this correctly, you guys volunteered to have, you guys in the aggregate, to have, and you were there too, Joy, to have student input from both Assembly for Justice and the traditional student leaders, constituencies in those committees. And Susan Murphy's back on campus, and they're working on that now between Murphy and Opperman and Ken Hubble, Vice President Murphy, Vice President Opperman, and Dean Hubble. And so that will be the substance of what happens at the end, which will be a more sort of fulsome report. But in the meantime, very soon, and I'm not sure exactly what the date will be, we'll have some more information coming out to the campus. I'm going to go on this overseas trip a week from Thursday and then be back just before Thanksgiving. I'm hoping that I may be able to get something out before that. And we're working on that to see what's happened. But I think it's important that we don't await the end of year message to have, end of semester message to have some more word out to the campus of what's happening. I also hope, I'm not saying this because Chief Zoner is here, I hope people really look and read the weekly messages that she's sending out. Some of those messages are reminding people about services that the students don't want to use. I realize that. Nonetheless, I think it's important. As I think she'll affirm, as recently as Saturday afternoon, I was sitting in her office in Barton Hall talking about other issues that we need to be working on. And so there's a lot of work going on behind the scenes. That doesn't help the campus at all, except substantively with the good work that COPD and Demand and others are doing. But it's clear that the communication that we have done, even about excellent services that are available, has not hit the mark. And it's part my thing, part your thing, Casey, part everybody's thing. It's also, since we're always open with each other here, it's also individual responsibility, perhaps in a way that's what Randy was getting at, for people to use these services when they're available if they might help. And so it's going to take, as Illuminate the Night brought out, a multifaceted, everybody put their shoulder to the wheel approach, because these are really complicated problems. And it's going to take some combination of, I believe, some trainings on campus, like the Respect for Cornell, perhaps others. Whether or not it's a four-credit course, I don't know, but some training. Some interaction, I think, between the shared governance groups. It's going to take open ears and minds on the part of the administration. It's going to take individual responsibility. And it's going to take, I think, perhaps, and Mary Beth is here, perhaps us pushing the limits of transparency on the results of adjudications so that there's some deterrent effect and the community understands what's happening. It's very hard to do that. There's very strict approaches that the General Counsel and JA and the police use about ongoing and completed investigations. But I think we all need to push the envelope as hard as we can for transparency in those. And Mary Beth's run the JA office that way the whole time that I've worked with her, trying to go in the direction of more appropriate transparency. But that's also, you and I haven't had a chance to talk about this, Mary Beth, but it's also one of the things that people are concerned about is what's happening with investigation X or Y, whether it's a CUPD or a JA investigation. Are there leads? Do we have any idea what's happening? Is someone still potentially at large that could be causing problems? And, you know, where do you find that sweet spot where you don't inhibit the investigation by letting out information that could compromise it, but yet give people not just a stop, but comfort that something is really happening? So I think those are all some of the elements of things that have to happen. And I'll count on Tommy's good offices and judgment to keep me on track to get more messages out, but also, again, on you all to work with me through the shared governance groups to make some things happen quicker rather than slower.
And just to clarify, I didn't mean to equate what happened at Amherst with the events that happened here. I was just making a comment about the process and sort of...
It was excellent. Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah.
And one other clarification. I do read the weekly safety messages, and they're great. I just think the statement from Day Hall is what I think a lot of students would appreciate,
yeah.
But it's been going for like 3 or 4 weeks now that I come out.
Yeah.
I think
before
you
yeah. Yeah.
And it's
yeah.
Very...
Yeah.
And students have commented about it. Also.
Good. Good. Okay. I appreciate that. It's very helpful. You closed your pen as you're sick and tired of me now. Should I go?
No.
It looked like that because you closed your pen up like that.
I do know that you're very important and you probably have other places to be.
Did you hear that?
No.
Did you hear what she said?
I know.
Why don't you ask that way? All right. Well, it's okay. That's okay. Not the odd part about how I have places to go, but that I'm very important. See, not even listening. No. I just want to tell you something that will really cut your ego down to size. And you've seen this, Joe, because you've come to senior staff meetings now. You're sitting around with the senior staff of the university at a much smaller table than this with fewer people, and they're texting each other while I'm talking. They're texting each other. Right? See, even the dean of faculty is a problem in this regard. So,
perhaps
okay.
They're tweeting. You know, getting out the message.
These are old people. They don't know how to tweet. They don't know what that means. These are people who, when you say tweet, they think about the lab of ornithology. They're not thinking about this kind of Twitter stuff. Okay, thanks a lot for letting me come, you guys.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for the good ideas.
All right. In the interest, I'd like to propose amending the agenda. So I propose that we hear from Kathy Zoner now, and then I know it's a tough act to follow. And then after her. Sorry to have your attention, but we also have some nominations for the review board to address before the end of the meeting. So I just wanted to give you an idea about how the agenda is going to go from here.
All right. So we have Kathy Zoner, the Chief of Cornell Police,
here with the presentation. So you have the floor.
Okay. So what I was asked to do is run down quickly kind of some of the increased services or what we've been doing in response to some of the increased activity that we've had on campus this semester in particular, but extending back at least in the spring with the first requirement from the PI incident. And I guess what I'd like to say is in addition to what we're doing in response to those incidents, there are lots of other incidents that are going on in this office. So while we're putting all this stuff together, there are a lot of other investigations that are going on. There are a lot of other responses to calls that are going on. We're still transporting a lot of people for alcohol poisoning. Maybe there are the low-level crimes that maybe don't interfere on this grand scale of the university, but then you go towards the center of how people feel, how safe people feel on campus. But it all kind of gets directed at the big media sort of focus event. So for our purposes, I think number one for us is really increased programming. The programs at the crime prevention office, they've kind of really blown the lid off of how much outreach they've been doing. But not just those officers. Any officer off the street, we've had a lot of people pulled in by groups, even seeing the patrol officers out in uniform and saying, hey, can you speak for a couple of minutes about safety for my group? And that is fantastic. That has gone over tremendously. I'm thoroughly pleased that people actually feel comfortable enough to grab the officer, bring them in, and have them do that. So even if it's a 10-15-minute safety spiel or Q&A after the stop sort of situation, it's gone over very well. One of the things that I'm really glad is that really shows people have more comfort with our officers. We did create a task force, it's a collaboration.
Yeah. Sounds like a lot of money.
Yeah, really.
My umbrella just tried to open. I didn't do anything.
Yeah. We did activate a task force, and for what that means for us is we've designated three officers full time to the investigation of the reports of the forcible touching and sexual assault, partially to try to keep them in a connection in between of it, but really to try to bring some of the unsolved cases, and there are solved cases, not the ones that are in the crime queue at the moment. There are plenty of questions also that are adjudicated through the judicial administrator's office and otherwise resolved. So those three officers are dedicated full-time to gathering evidence, processing evidence, applying for and getting and serving search warrants, working with other agencies, looking for similar cases across the county, and just really putting a lot of stuff together. They made significant headway, but it feels like snail's pace, I'm sure, from the outside looking at when these types of crimes happen, we want a result, we want to find out who did it, we want them arrested right now, and I feel that way as well. So I try to stay out of the task force room unless invited, because then they don't get my protest if you're asking those questions. We are doing collaborative efforts, as Adam brought up, around activities in different areas of the campus. So if we have an opportunity to sponsorship or an opportunity to show up and be a part of a program that students are putting on, again, bringing together the communities that we feel need us most, and providing either tabling sessions or inviting people to be part of us and joining the Blue Light Escorts program or giving educational outreach or plan on being around when some of the programs are going on so people know that we participate as well. We are participating, as David pointed out, on the incident management team. We have staff that are in those five breakout groups that are trying to resolve some of the issues and bring back solutions. We've done a significant amount of applications search for safety applications that could be applied to actually what we're looking for is any cell phone. Not everybody has a smartphone. So we're making some headway on that. I just put into the capital plan request to have Raid Guardian be reviewed for funding for next year. One of the highest level, I think, one of the best services available. Again, that's sort of like a picture phone would be like a portable blue light phone. We have all these blue light phones all over the campus. I think they're fantastic. I don't think you need to pull any of them. Sometimes your cell phones don't work for whatever reason, and you've got to have a stationary phone, a landline, a hard line to get you there. But most people, truth be told, are much more comfortable with their cell phone than they are picking up any other phone on this campus, and my records show that. So if I can make it easier for you to call me when you need me, then we would like to do that. And if you have a chance to go and view Ray Flanagan, they're very transparent on the internet. You can look up, they've got these great little timer service, so if you're walking alone, you can punch in the time that you're leaving, your estimated time to the arrival of your location. If you fail to check back, if you fail to check in at your location, we come looking for you. Through GPS to the phone, it'll locate you. If you, along your walk, you need to have a reason to activate it. If you simply click the panic button that you can click in, it'll send us a notice. You can also, when you set in your time, when you're leaving, you can also talk and leave a voice message that says, I'm leaving from this location to that location, and today I'm wearing this. So more information that if we are put in a situation where we need to look for you for some reason, we know what you were wearing, we know you were headed, we know you were getting past travel, and if you still hold on to your phone, we've got a GPS location on it. And it will do the last known locations you sent the phone check off or something to look for the last time. Really fabulous program, and I know a lot of other campuses, over 500 campuses, 500 911 centers and campuses, which is available to the public as well, are using it. We're continuing to have more exterior cameras in some of the problem areas, the traffic trip points, both on the bridges and in the Walthall Corridor, Utah Pathway, just as far as we've identified a ton, but we know that we're going to be limited on any funding that would come forward. So we put over what we thought were our highest priorities and what are our biggest gains, because we already have a project going on the bridge. All the bridges, the cameras being installed, so why not expand that project? We are, as you mentioned last meeting, working with Transportation Services, starting to meet on reviewing the bus service and see if whatever we come up with might be a little more user friendly and available. We're doing a lot of blue light education, still trying to teach people the difference between the blue light bus, four wheels, drives on the roadway, people. The blue light escort, walk, people that walk, and the blue light phone, which is a telephone. I don't know why people get them mixed up. People get them all mixed up. We do a lot of education around that. Do you have a Facebook page? We have 205 likes so far, so jump on there if you haven't. I have noticed that the most popular age group that likes us is between 35 and 45 years old. Not our target group, but it's okay. Somebody's looking at us, and that is information trickling down. It's very interesting. On our Facebook page, we're taking that opportunity. People bring us an activity that we feel we can support. Like if you're at walk share, a student parent called and said, hey, my student is my daughter is a board member, and she's promoting this love and respect activity. Put it right up on the Facebook. It's something we can get behind. We put it out there. The breast cancer awareness notification. Change our mission records. Change on the spur of the moment. That's as good as we can go. But just any time that we can make a community connection, we're putting it out there. The blue shuttle, I had a quick question while I'm presenting. Do we know if that's going to be available during these prelims, or is it not going to be available again until advanced? That's you.
Not until advanced. We don't have the full funding.
No, I understand the funding was a problem.
Right.
I just didn't know if you had plans for some of the prelims.
Right
if
now,
not, I just want that schedule. We'll put it up on our Facebook page. We'll promote. I'll promote it by using the safety message. So we'll go from there.
Thank you. And we appreciate the funding you gave us for that one weekend.
Yeah, we just had to extend it that much, and thank Mary Alperman for being here enough with our approval that we move forward on that. Public Safety Advisory Committee is going to be in the next couple of weeks, and we'll be reviewing our lighting survey. Now, this year we did three lighting surveys, two, one north and one, our annual is one north and one west, but then we also did one separate from that that was incident specific, so we went back to all the crime alerts that happened in the last 12 months. And we went to each location and said, okay, what can we do here? Even if it was duplicating efforts, we may have concentrated effort there. We can take your messages. And then one thing I wanted to share with this group is I do believe, and I stand by, that I think we're seeing an increased level of reporting on lower level incidents. So that's some crime alerts. And the last one in particular was, it was iffy whether or not we even needed to put it out. Because it wasn't a clearly reportable crime, but based on the campus atmosphere and the level of concern that people have going around, and some of the particulars of that crime, a single person with a mask, no other Halloween garb, grabbing someone in a dark parking garage, just didn't feel good to me, didn't feel safe to me. If it didn't feel safe to me, it's probably not going to feel safe to everybody else. So that was kind of erring on the side of giving more information. Now what that does, unfortunately, is gives more of a crime alert and people get more upset, but these are the types of things that we need to be aware of. I think if you have people who are pranking and thinking they're funny on Halloween, this sends out a message that it's not funny. And hoping it will deter some of the things that are going on. I also think that this is a type of, excuse the technical term, grab ass, that goes on all over campus, all the time for women on campus. And up till the last couple of years, people have been just tolerating it. We took in the one report of the forceful punching at the Avicii concert, and the feedback we got from that was like, what, you only got one? You know, I got grabbed like 18 times when I was at the concert. So I know this goes on a lot more than reported. And I'm pleased that people are bringing these reports forward. It does have a counter effect of them making me feel like more crime is happening. And when we get into those attempted rapes, or the rape that was reported, the stranger rapes that are reported, the stranger grabs, those are the ones that are beyond the forcible touching, the ones that are really look like a concerted effort to detain someone, or those are the ones that concern us, and those are what we're focusing on investigative efforts. If there are connections to other crimes that are lower level, we definitely tie them in, and that's something that we look for. I also just want to make another mention that our annual security report comes out every October. Take a look soon. You'll see some changes in our number of sexual assaults that are reported. Again, I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. And Jay's office, I know, is hearing a lot of things in this other sort of situation. What we also see is people will take a look at the sexual assaults in the Cleary report and say, well, there's only two crime alerts. How come I didn't get a crime alert on the other sexual assaults? We don't do crime alerts on every sexual assault. We do crime alerts on any crime that is a reportable crime, and those typically are violent crimes as well as sexual assaults, even sometimes harassment, other forcible touching, there's an imminent danger to the youth. So if we haven't caught someone and it's likely that this event is going to be perpetrated again, or we can't show that it's not likely that it won't be, then we will put out a crime alert. Sometimes it gets a little, and most of the women that are reporting these low-level crimes are feeling awful bringing them forward. And I feel bad about that, because they shouldn't feel bad about reporting their crimes. But they really feel like society has told them that they're overreacting to what happened to them. And whether or not there was an overt sexual act implied or intended in any attack here, I think most of our minds go to that. As a matter of fact, it was the last trial that we put out there. No indication this wasn't grabbed in a sexual way, nobody said anything, there's no intent that was obvious on the surface, and yet some of the feedback that I got from my crime alert was, you know, Cornel needs to get a grip on rape. It wasn't a rape, it wasn't even a sexual, but I know that's where our minds go. But I do want to caution people as you're reading into this, if we didn't put it in there, then it wasn't said. It wasn't the intent. And we don't know the intent was to take her wallet. We don't know if the intent was to spook her. It was a friend who made a really drunken and stupid mistake. We don't know what the intent on that was. And some of the other ones where we report that, oh, if we say it's a sexual based crime, then there's a reason why something in that evidence is brought forward, something was said, something was done, the type of
Thank you.
Can I respond to one particular point? On your mention of the Blue Eye Service, I would caution you to make light of the educational component to it. I know from my own community, and I showed you one response on Saturday while we were beginning the meeting. You know, it very much promoted the Blue Light Services, the escort services. In particular, are very much promoted to all the campus. But the fact is that graduate students, it really doesn't help. because most of us live too far away for it to be a realistic thing. And so I think we really need to be cautious of that from my community, and I'm representing my community. Even those that live on campus, it doesn't help. I don't think, because does the Blue Light Services, did it escort someone to Hasbro?
Absolutely.
Okay.
So,
right, right. But for instance, I have a lot of female friends that are graduate professional students that live along University Avenue between, I believe, Lake and Fall Creek. And that's an area that's had a lot of incidents over the past year and a half that I've been on campus. And I believe I emailed you after the incidences in September. I think it originally was intended for the mayor and Susan Murphy, but I think you saw it afterwards. That's an area of particular concern for my community. And so I think that making sure that the education on the Blue Light Services really does, you know, there needs to be something for graduate professional students.
There needs to be a service for anyone who lives off campus in a significant direction.
Mm-hmm.
The people that live farther out on East Hill, Snyder Hill area,
mm-hmm.
The people even as far as out of the PNC, it's difficult for people walking at court out that direction. You know, ultimately, if a person chooses to live that far away, then they should be thinking about their transportation as well. But that said, that's kind of why I want to meet with. It's a combination. There's a walking escort that's meant to get people around campus
mm-hmm.
and close to campus, College Town, and I would even mention to say, you know, the Gun Hill is not a huge. It's not a stretch for us to go down the Gun Hill.
Mm-hmm.
We've done lots of escorts in that direction.
Mm-hmm.
So once you start getting farther and farther into the flats and into downtown area, people need to be thinking about how am I going to get from point A to point B. That said, a lot of people are coming from metro areas where there is all night transportation. There is opportunity to do that, to stick to your own 5 o'clock and stick to your own schedule or your work schedule that you don't have any control over and get to where you need to go. But the walking is not the only thing.
And I definitely appreciate graduate and professional students being a part of that discussion.
Right.
I'll volunteer myself, and I'm sure others in my community would be willing to as well.
Right. Absolutely. I'll get a hold of you as soon as we get some
traction
or
direction. That'd be great. Thank you.
I see hands being raised, but it's 6 o'clock. I motion to extend the time of this meeting by 15 minutes. If you have anything that you need to be at, you are excused. Will anybody?
Second in.
Is there any objections? No. We will extend this meeting by 15 minutes. Let's continue. I know Adam have a point, then Liz, then Tanya, then Bridget. Sorry. There's a speaking list.
Thank you for coming. And I know a lot of SA members have been really thankful for working with you and getting to come in and working with them. It's been really great over the past couple months. My one quick question is more for advice, and it does relate to the Blue Shuttle, and it also relates to what Mitch was just saying. There's a group of students and SA members who are working on a petition to get the Blue Shuttle year-round.
Right.
And
what? Right.
Funded mostly.
I understand. And you know what? When David alluded to other conversations we were having on my office this week, and that was one of them.
So I was wondering what your advice would be or next steps aside from putting together this petition, a student assembly, or UA resolution.
From my perspective, I guess outlining a petition which cites what you think is lacking in the current service.
Mm-hmm.
And asking a simple question and believing that that's the university's function and supporting the university's function, that the university should take that on. That there are constituent groups do this, in not within walking distance, but get close by. And we are a little limited in our geography. When you go downhill, it's a lot longer to come back uphill. So that type of a situation where, I think there are a number of different combination things that can be worked on, but that's whether you work a deal with this taxi, get a discount or some sort, or whether you're working with a Blue Shuttle, the costs have to be really priced out. And that's the first conversation I have to do, and then bring other people to the table about what then it gives us, here's what we have, and here's what we have available, so how can we make this work for us? So there are, and we are working with a sort of a co contract with PCAP. So there might be some limitations on in drivers and all sorts of things like that. But if you then can downsize to one size, then you don't need the same bus driver, and I have no idea what ridership is. So those are the kinds of questions for transportation I think you would.
So the TCAT has a citizens advisory committee that I sit on. It's
mm-hmm.
not particularly well used, but
I would bring the petition up there as well.
Yeah.
Kind of get those angles so they know what's coming.
So if I can jump in here, since I think I'm next on the
list. Next.
So as also representative from the GTSA, I wanted to echo what Mitch was saying. I have definitely heard from my constituents that it doesn't extend far enough. And I really appreciate the fact that you're bringing up this petition. If I might make a suggestion for the UA body, this might be something to direct towards the infrastructure committee. And I think that faculty, staff, students, and grad students clearly are all very affected by, I mean, you're understaffed. You're doing an amazing job with educational outreach.
Yeah. You're having a solid, supportive infrastructure that provides access to the campus and its nearby areas makes sense. Whether or not the university can afford to do it, that's just take the work and try to figure that out.
So I think this might be a really good thing, and Bridget, you can throw something at me if I'm wrong here. But this might be really something to direct towards the infrastructure committee, and I was wondering if you would be willing to work with the infrastructure committee to address this sort of issue. Because I recognize that we only have a few more minutes left, and I don't want this sort of a conversation to stop here.
I'm happy to be there, but I really think the best voice comes from those constituents that really need to use the service. Because I can guess what people's needs are, but I really can't speak to it from the perspective of having to use it. I don't use it. I wouldn't use it. I have my own transportation and my own needs. But there are many, many groups I think that have an opportunity to voice their concerns. And the more collective you can make this concern, there will be concessions that have to be made across groups. I mean, not everybody can get delivered to their door. But if you can get closer to your door, you know, that's a step in the right direction. Right now, what we have doesn't quite get people where they think they want to go, and whether that's because our population has moved, or I don't know what, that does require. But I think
no, great. Because I think it's a larger issue. I don't think it's a singular. There's no silver bullet that's going to solve this, right?
Right.
And I also just really wanted to say that I appreciated that you brought up how there's an increased level of reporting on lower level incidents. And I really think that speaks well to, you bring in the issue of women and their feelings of insecurity with coming forward about these sorts of incidents. And I just think that really speaks well for your group that there is an increase in women who are feeling more comfortable in coming with you with these minor incidents. It's often, they will, as you know, more so than I, that they will escalate from there and raising awareness. So I just wanted to thank you so much for bringing that up. Daniel?
So one of the things I think is really new, but maybe more transportation, but we just spoke to me when we were talking about, working on non-profit and all that kind of thing. There are a lot of employees who park out on campus, and I think this is particular being graduate students as well. And, you can get an ID permit on campus, but you have to pay for that. And, why not make a move to make campus parking lot open and free to any person or, with your Cornell, head after 5 o'clock. So if you are here in the building looking late, sweaty, or whatever, you can park closer. I mean, I think it's really ridiculous if someone has to, an employee parking out A lot, there's no shelter, only get to A lot, so you start walking, the people who the situation. And,
I mean, just, I work late night compared to Thessaloniki or PTC, and I walk some employees to their car at 4 in the morning sometimes, just because I'm concerned with their safety and their, especially if they're the first few travelers.
Right.
So that's a great point.
Yeah.
That's an excellent point.
So is that, I mean, I'll just put it out there, that's something that we need to resolution on.
Well, there are, I mean, there are a lot of parking spaces that are open to in Central University, so you can move in closer. How close would be presented on restructuring the park?
Yeah.
So I'm not clear. I don't want to speak to that. That would be the conversation I have with the
Yeah.
Is there any other questions for Kathy Zoner or Mary Beth Grant? Jim.
So last year we passed Title IX, last year we passed Court Safety. Have they had any impact? I know the policy isn't fully implemented yet for Title IX, but Court Safety, did you
bring
up the striping and determine the gorges? And is there anything, more importantly, that you currently see in the campus code or in the judicial system that maybe you would like us to focus on? You know, like court safety.
I have some of them prepared to be said, so it's out of my mind at the moment. If I am out of my mind. But I know there were a couple things that were raised. I think there was something raised in the University of Sydney last week. I think that had to do with harassment. I don't know.
You see if they were, how strong they were. You thought that they were covered. Maybe it wasn't clear.
Right.
We're going to be tasked to go look and see what the facts are when we think about it.
Right. And I can't think of what the other one was.
So your statistics are out at the end of October, which is what, tomorrow. Have you seen a noticeable blip from last
year? They are due out on October 1st. So they've already gotten
okay.
They're available on the web.
I apologize. I haven't read them yet. Did you notice any statistical variances that
nothing that would be, you would have to see a trending before it would really, because you get spikes and lifts all over the place and there's crimes that pop up and go down. So what we're concerned with is looking at over a period of time, what's the trending. So for instance, the National Institute of Justice tracks crimes that are associated with victims, and that's how, it's really about the only place you can go to say how many crimes weren't reported. It's very difficult to know that. But they actually interview people that haven't reported any crimes and say, hey, if you could have reported a crime, did something happen to you? And that's how they come up with these statistics. But they do them every 10 years, so they do them over trending times. And that's another support for the increased reporting. The one before last was in the 94, 95, I think. It was showing that about a little over a third of sexually motivated crimes go unreported. When they redid it in 2005, I believe it was, that had gone down to a little over two-thirds.
over three quarters in 1995 were unreported, but that is reduced to two-thirds unreported in 2005. So it's small headway, but it's some headway. And that's really the only way, other than anecdotal stuff, checking into different services, and trying to do an aggregate.
So nothing you want us to do for you at this juncture?
Yeah, I cannot think of anything, but when I do, I'll bring the teaching and do a, I'm sure we'll hear.
You know, the other thing just that I would add with respect to the special effects in particular, the query statistics don't capture off-campus misconduct. So that's something to be aware of. The other thing
they do if the agency reports it to us.
Oh, good.
Yeah, if the agency reports it to us, but they're not obligated to give us their report.
Yeah, and I know there's definitely some of that we hear about that people on our mind have heard that. And then the other thing is that we were talking with the trustees about it before. You know, we definitely are seeing an increase in the number of reports, but we still know that it's far under the level. It's just going to be based on what we would expect for the size of our student population. Getting it in double digits for the first time last year is significant compared to the 90s through the early 2000s or the 3 years. That's significant, but it was probably hundreds happening every year.
I think there's something that Louis Patton said. I think it's good
Paul, did you advise you to?
And even though there may be more increase in would I be wrong to feel somewhere inside that there's an increase in infection as well?
I think that's hard to tell. I think there are too many mitigating factors to include the use of alcohol and other drugs that make people act in ways that they maybe don't agree if they went under the influence. So that increases level of chronicity.
That's exactly what I'm talking about.
But I think that was always present. Like again, that's one of those things you don't really know. You don't know what was reported, what wasn't reported. We weren't paying attention like we have been in the last 5 years to people's overuse of use of alcohol. Having been working so hard to correct that. So I think I think a lot of issues go forward to try to help curb this and get better control over it and get better education of people that are affected by it, save lives, to less quality public, and yet we haven't seen that much of a change. So I'm inclined to agree with you, but I don't want to agree with you. This is off record, but I'm going to institute a curfew during this week. No men will be allowed out on campus after 10 o'clock at night. Women may now be any crime being committed. No, I'm just kidding. Sometimes, you feel like you really need to be extreme with things, and when it's feeling that way, I think that usually what that means is a feeling of fear. We need for safety, and I'm going to try to do other things to provide people something that's tangible that they can hold their hand and move forward. Like the buffers, like the app, the safety app, something that people are already taking care of, be that addiction, but in a safe way and with them.
Okay, we're going to move very quickly and table this discussion. If you have any more questions for Mary Beth Grant and Cassie Zellner, please talk to them after the meeting. We're going to move on to the hearing and review board nominations. We have a few more faculty nominees, and their nominations are up on the screen. I can't actually see that.
I
can't.
You need it?
What's
the
name?
I'm Overton, Jonathan, Ashburn, Alex Flecker, Frank Guido, and Bernadette Nader.
All right. Well, their nominations are on the screen. Is there any objections to their nomination to the University Hearing Review Board? I hear no objections. The University Assembly have approved their nomination.
Do we need to officially vote, or is that kosher?
Formally voted.
Wait, is it?
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm just referring to you, but it's on.
No. Well, anyone?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
Making
sure.
Okay.
I now move to adjourn the meeting.
Thanks, Evan. A parliamentarian.
Anybody second that?
A second.
I now adjourn the meeting at 6:18 p.m. Tuesday, October 30th.
This has been a production of Cornell University on the web at cornell.edu.